Gail Harris in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Europeans were living with the daily threat of terrorism long before Americans experienced it on September 11th. The British had IRA bombings, the French, violence in Algiers. In Spain, it was Basque separatists and the ETA. But those attacks usually came with warnings and were on a much smaller scale than what we saw in Madrid last week. Post-September 11th, Europeans said, however briefly, that we are all Americans now. Last week, Americans returned the sentiment, with the New York Times promise that 3/11 had made us all madrileños. But even if those bombings turn out to be the work of al-Qaeda, as is now believed, Europeans may react very differently to these new threats, as Spanish voters did almost immediately in turning out the government that supported the U.S. war on Iraq. This hour, we want to hear from you. If it turns out the Madrid bombings were the work of Islamic terrorists, how do you think Europeans should respond? Will the first appearance of global jihad on European soil change or harden the minds of those who reject the Bush administration's war on terror? Will these new security concerns draw Europe and the U.S. closer or drive them even farther apart? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining us now on the line from Madrid is James Graff, the Brussels and Paris bureau chief for Time magazine. Welcome, James.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us. Let me ask first if you agree with the basic premise that we're laying out here, that even before March 11th and perhaps even separate from the war in Iraq, that Europeans saw the war on terror in a different way than Americans did.
Well, I mean, there's certainly been an awful lot of terror deaths in Europe, 800 in Spain alone in the last 30 years due to ETA, the Basque separatist terror organization. I think what we've seen in this election here and in the horrible events of the last 3 days is that, there's a distinction perhaps between the war on terror in people's mind in Europe and the war in Iraq. I mean, they're two different kettle of fish for many Europeans. They don't necessarily see the war in Iraq as a war against terror as much as it is in some fashion a war that foments terror in their eyes, and that's part of the reaction that we saw at the polls yesterday or on Sunday.
And does this now seem to be fairly clearly the work of al-Qaeda, James?
Well, every additional indication points more and more clearly in that direction. There's now connections being made between Jamal Zougam, a Moroccan that lived here for many years, and the bombings in Casablanca last May, as well as connections with an al-Qaeda network, mostly involved with stealing credit cards and kind of funding and other kind of connective material, if you will, to the network. But there were connections with him drawn even back in an indictment that one of the famous Spanish judge, Baltasar Garzón, did several years ago, where this man's name shows up, but was actually never arrested, but was implicated or mentioned in the indictment that was leveled against others who weren't arrested in December of 2001. So, I mean, this is a place where there's a lot of there's a high level of Muslim population, and there have been more arrests made in Spain, 40 all told, since 2001, than in any other country in Europe. So this is a place where Islamic terrorists, if they want to have a base in Europe, have found a very easy place to be.
Mm. How do you account for the fact, then, that the Spanish government was initially quite reluctant to blame al-Qaeda?
Well, this is actually the heart of the dispute right here in Spain right now. The conservative government of José María Aznar has made a great effort, a great focus on the fight against ETA terrorists, and has been extremely successful in doing so. Last year, ETA killed only 3 people in Spain, not enough, but much, much lower than other years when they killed up into the 30s and 40s. So ETA has been his focus of terrorism. And when a bomb goes off in Spain, after all I said, 800 people have died through ETA, when a bomb goes off here, the natural assumption of everyone of whatever political color is that it was ETA. But as the evidence began to mount, the van found that very morning with an Islamic tape in it. Later on that evening, an admission of guilt or an admission of responsibility from another Islamic group that turned out perhaps to have been false, but nevertheless, a continuing amount of data that seemed to suggest more and more al-Qaeda. And yet, the concern of the government was they really pulled every lever possible to keep people focused on the prospect that it was, in fact, ETA, because they felt that the feeling is that they felt, and in fact some of them will say this, that if it was Islamic terrorists, then the very problem of the war and Spain's involvement in the war reenters the equation of the election and could devolve to the disadvantage of the government, and that in fact is what happened.
And perhaps the notion that the current government at the time would benefit more from it being ETA, because the notion from voters might be, well, we better stick with what we have.
Well, yeah, exactly. And if it's ETA, then no one has been more successful in fighting ETA than Aznar. And certainly, it was not a false assumption. It was just the kind of accumulation, the message that went out from the Spanish foreign minister, all ambassadors of Spain, all throughout the world on Thursday, even after this van had been found, saying that they should use every opportunity to make the argument that it was ETA, for instance. I mean, really very questionable politics. In fact, if you talk to people on the street, why did they vote the way they did? Many of them say that it was more the way the government handled the aftermath of the bombings and handled this kind of stubborn insistence on ETA that upset them and drove them to the polls than the bombings themselves. Now, obviously, it's very difficult to untangle those two motivations, and you'll talk to one and another, and they merge at some point. But I think what's important to know about the vote is that this was an extremely high voter participation, the highest voter participation that they've had in Spain since 1983, since the democracy, essentially. And people that had not intended to vote because they thought that the government was going to win, all the polls suggested that it would, they, somehow the way this happened seemed to draw anger up in people and put people that were opposed to the government in a mood to go out and vote, and that's exactly what happened. They didn't waste their vote, if you will, on far-left candidates. All those parties lost considerable numbers. They went straight to the socialists, made a so-called useful vote, and put Aznar out of power in a very massive and convincing way. I mean, this was the Spanish equivalent of a wipeout.
Exactly. Well, James, we thank you so much, and appreciate your insight.
My pleasure.
Thanks, James. James Graff, who is the Paris and Brussels bureau chief for Time magazine. He was on the line from Madrid. And I now want to bring into the conversation Julianne Smith, who is a fellow and deputy director of the International Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. Hello, Julianne.
Good morning.
Well, you just heard what James had to say. I'm curious about your take about pre-11. How worried do you think the Europeans were about this kind of terrorist attack? Did they feel that not going along with the U.S. war in Iraq offered some kind of protection because, you know, clearly Spain was this target and they were one of the strongest supporters of that effort?
Well, I think pre-311 for Spain and for Europe more broadly, terrorism was very much a real threat. And Europe has shown how serious it takes the threat, particularly Spain, by moving forward on a number of fronts. Spain has been a tremendous partner for the United States on many tactical levels. It has assisted the U.S. in cutting off terrorist financing. We've focused together on law enforcement. We're working together on intelligence sharing. The list is quite long. But again, I agree with James. You have to separate out how Europe looks at the overall broad threat of terrorism and how they look at what happened in Iraq. So if you look at kind of what the reactions might be to this inside Europe and particularly in Spain, at the national level, I think we'll continue to see Spain's interests on securing its kind of homeland defense, so to speak. It's going to continue to focus on those issues I just mentioned. It's going to be interested in working much more on public safety, on securing trains and buses and metros and things like that. Mm. But in terms of the overall buy-in to whether or not terrorism can be fought with military force, that's something that's kind of been put on the table here. again, that the polling numbers in Spain, as we just talked about, were extremely high. 90% of the population was in opposition to Spain joining the coalition in Iraq. And now there will be even more resistance to the government partnering with the U.S. when it comes to using the military instrument, kind of using military force to attack terrorism or fight terrorism.
And in fact, the new government has already said and promised before the election that they were going to pull the troops out as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. They're now revisiting whether or not they're going to maintain any sort of troop presence in Iraq. They've put in the caveat that they may stay if the UN were to take the lead. And it's kind of unclear what that means, what type of resolution would be required. And if we don't manage to secure a strong UN role in Iraq in the coming weeks and months, the next question is, well, if NATO were to get involved in some capacity, would that make Spain feel more comfortable with maintaining its troops presence inside the region?
Although without Spain to make that case to NATO, isn't it a lot more difficult now? That was what the Bush administration was hoping, is that Spain would be the main advocate for that notion of more NATO involvement.
Absolutely. In some of my conversations with the folks over at NATO in Brussels, it's been clear that there's been a wide assumption or broad speculation that there'd be a big announcement this summer. NATO will be having one of its summits in Istanbul. And there was the expectation that NATO would come to the table with an announcement that it would be much more broadly engaged in the reconstruction efforts inside Iraq. And now all of that has been put into question. It's unclear whether or not Spain will take more of an opposition role inside the alliance in NATO taking on that type of role, or whether or not it will just kind of abstain from the debate, or whether it'll decide to continue to partner with the United States. It's really the whole dynamic inside Europe has fundamentally changed because of Spain's decision in the last couple of days to possibly withdraw troops. I mean, you had this coalition of what some call the unwilling inside Europe. You had France and Germany opposed to what happened in Iraq. And then kind of around France and Germany, you had a number of countries like Spain, like the UK, Denmark, and Poland surrounding those two countries that were actually supportive of the war in Iraq. And now with Spain making statements, the new leadership talking about being more pro-European, moving more closely to France and Germany, the question becomes, how does that whole dynamic affect, as we talked about, NATO's role in the region, but broader EU participation, and also just the overall relationship between the United States and Europe? How will that unfold in the coming months?
Exactly. And when we come back after a break, we're going to pick up on that point and also how the threshold of terror in Europe is changing. We're talking this hour about how Europeans are responding to the bombings in Madrid. We thank James Graff for joining us earlier this segment, and Julianne Smith will be back after we take a break. Listeners, what's your take on the best way to counter terrorism? Are tighter borders enough? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Gail Harris, and for Dick Gordon, this is The Connection from NPR. And for Dick Gordon, this is The Connection. And this hour, we're talking about how Europeans are dealing with the threat of al-Qaeda in the wake of the attacks last week in Madrid, and also how Europeans' response may differ from ours. My guests are Julianne Smith from the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and in a moment, we're going to be hearing from Constanze Stelzenmüller, who is the international security and defense editor of Die Zeit. She's joining us on the line from Hamburg. Constanze, how are you? Thanks for joining
us. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, we also have a phone caller that we want to hear from and want to get your response to. Mark's on the line from New York City. Hello, Mark.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, I was, you know, shocked, as I'm sure many people were, with the elections a few days ago. I've lived in New York City before and after 9/11. I work in the Empire State Building, and it's real every day. When the terror threat goes up, you know, I don't take the subway, we don't go to the big events, that kind of thing. It's real every day. It's not just on Fox and CNN. And to think that the European countries are going to begin to act like the French is just disappointing. This is classic. It's the most basic human psychology. It's a conditioned response. Al-Qaeda dealt a blow, and they recoiled, and all that is positive reinforcement. So that just teaches them, hey, this is going to work. Let's keep doing it.
So what would you suggest, Mark?
That they, I hate to borrow Bush's most popular word, have some resolve here. Stand up. It's crazy, and it's disappointing.
All right. Appreciate the phone call, Mark. Constanza, what about that? I mean, presumably this is the Bush administration's worst nightmare to somehow send a signal to Al-Qaeda that this works, that they've won.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to respond to what Mark said. I lived in Spain for some time, and the Spanish weren't responding to Al-Qaeda. They were responding to being lied to by their government. That is what they were really furious about. The government had apparently misinformed diplomats, it had misinformed journalists, and it had told the public that it was considering an Al-Qaeda involvement in the middle of the night, basically, at 1 o'clock at night, when people on the night running up to the elections. That is what people were angry about. Now, I agree with Mark about the new Spanish Prime Minister's announcement that he will withdraw his troops from Iraq. I think that's ill-considered, and it sounds to me as though the Prime Minister hasn't been reading what the French and the Germans have been doing since, which is seeking rapprochement with Washington.
Well, and also, is Al-Qaeda going to be able to draw that kind of distinction of, well, no, it's not that this worked, it's the Spanish voters were just unhappy with their government?
Well, I think that was pretty obvious from Spanish media reports and European media reports. The question now, I think, as to which conclusions Al-Qaeda will be able to draw in the future is very much dependent on how unified Europe's response will be to this. And Iraq and Afghanistan is just part of that picture. I'd like to remind Mark and other listeners that Europeans and Americans are still acting together in Afghanistan, in the Balkans, and in a naval operation in the Mediterranean.
Julianne, I also want to get your take on what this means in terms of the threshold of terror in Europe as well as the United States, because terrorism used to be a few victims at a time, and now it seems to be targeted toward as much slaughter as possible.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I think Europe and the United States, they're looking at the issue of terrorism, but through slightly different prisms. I mean, Europeans will tell you, look, we've lived with terrorism. We've experienced terrorism for decades. This is something that's not new to us. We are continuing to work with you on your war against terrorism. But again, the real divide is up until 3/11 in Madrid really has been the scale of the attacks. And again, Americans would then respond back and say, okay, Europe, we know you've experienced terrorism on many fronts, many different countries, but we don't think that you're looking at terrorism in the same way we are. We're looking at mass destruction. We had thousands of people who were killed on September 11th. And now what you see in Madrid is an attack that resembles more closely the attacks that we saw here in the United States. And so, of course, the knee-jerk reaction or the quick assumption that you can make is, aha, now we'll understand each other better. We're both facing the same threat. We're both being caught up, caught off guard by Al-Qaeda terrorists. But exactly the opposite has happened. Again, we're reaching different conclusions based on what's happened. The American response is, let's go get them. It's all about, like what Mark mentioned, it's about resolve, standing tall, going after the terrorists, showing them that they can't win. Europeans will tell you, we are with you on looking at root causes of terrorism, again, looking at law enforcement, intelligence sharing, cutting off terrorist financing. But when you talk about using military force to go after WMD or the terrorist threat, that's where we part ways. That's where we don't agree. We agree that the threat is real. We do not necessarily agree on the means to address that threat.
Constanza, is that the way you see it as well?
Yeah, I'd love to respond to that. let's look at two instances where Europe and America used military force together. One is Afghanistan, one is Iraq. Iraq is teetering on the brink of something like a civil war. In other words, military force on its own there has clearly not worked. America's readjusting its military policies. Some Europeans are trying to help them doing that, not all of us. But there's certainly a debate in Germany as well on whether we shouldn't be involved in post-war stabilization on Iraq, never mind what my government's position is at this point. Afghanistan, Germany until quite recently was in the lead of a NATO operation to stabilize the country. And the problem there is that all of us, the Americans included, have not been following up their promises to send troops and funds to stabilize Afghanistan completely, with the result that there's a resurgence in Taliban activity, which is very unpleasant and very dangerous.
Well, and also I'm wondering whether the United States, as the sole remaining superpower and also an ocean away, I mean, geography has to play a role here as well, doesn't it?
Well, is that a question to you?
Yes.
What do you mean by geography has to play a role?
The luxury, right. Europe is closer to the front lines, let me put it that way. You know, this was the first big attack on European soil. Clearly it resonated in a different way.
It
seems to be more of the Europeans going into a defensive crouch as opposed to the American position of we're going to take it to you.
You know, I don't think that that's correct. Europeans have thousands of troops out there fighting against al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and other assorted evildoers at the time we're speaking. The Europeans have gotten together to as Julianne Smith was saying, to up their intelligence and police capability, and they've done so quite impressively, although there's still work to be done since 9/11. And there is a lot of discussion in European military circles about how to deal with risks arising from North Africa. And that, of course, includes al-Qaeda and other Islamic groups operating there.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring Eric into the conversation now. He's on the line from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Eric. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Quick comment, and I'll get off the line here. But I think what my concern is we're seeing kind of a resurgence of appeasement, especially from the European nations at this time, and also here in the United States, a lot of the Democrats that I talk to are making the point that what we've got to do is we just need to get out of this, situation, leave these guys alone, and in return, basically we're going to be okay. They're going to leave us alone. Let's get out of their business and let's hope that these guys will not hit us in the future. And I think that is just so dangerous. There's nothing that is going to be resolved by that. I honestly believe that action and firm action and standing up is the way to handle this. And I just think that we're starting down a pretty dangerous road, especially now that Spain has made the call that they've made. I see this kind of this domino effect starting to take place.
Gotcha,
and
Eric.
In the end,
all right.
We're really going to.
Eric, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate your point. And let me put that to Julianne.
Well, I don't want to give the impression, and I think Constanzo doesn't either, that Europe somehow is sticking its head in the sand and just trying to make it all go away. That's absolutely not the case. The EU, the European Union, is going to be having an emergency meeting on Friday. It's pulling together all of its interior ministers. They're going to bring together their justice ministers to try and address this. There's talk now about appointing an anti-terrorism czar inside the EU. I mean, you're seeing movement. France is on a heightened state of alert. They're already talking about how can we secure rail travel. Right now, the tunnel between the UK and France, that's the only rail line that really requires some sort of security check. And there's lots of debate. There's lots of public debate. The think tanks in Europe are looking at this. There is a sense of urgency. It's not, let's just make this all go away by ignoring it. But again, we have a disagreement with the Europeans on whether or not addressing terrorism is best done by sending our forces into a country like Iraq, or whether or not we come at them from different angles, perhaps more subtle angles, angles that don't require troops necessarily. But again, I mean, Constanza had some very good points. It's not like there aren't Europeans participating in a lot of these missions. I mean, Germany alone has thousands of troops all over the place and is playing just a tremendous role in the efforts in Afghanistan. So we're not seeing the Europeans completely shy away on this. We are definitely having a strategic debate with our European friends right now on the best way to tackle terrorism. But they're not trying to make it go away. They're not covering up their eyes and covering up their ears and pretending like it doesn't exist. It's very real. And all you have to do is read the papers, talk to the people in Europe right now. There's a buzz over there about what this means for Europe. Germany's worried about its security because it's also involved in Afghanistan. Again, there's very much a heightened sense of alert in Europe right now.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Constanza, let me continue on that point and also ask, with, as you say, German troops involved in Afghanistan and elsewhere, is there great nervousness now where you are about, are we next? Are we the next target?
Well, I'd say there's a heightened sense of awareness. It's not like what I think Mark described earlier, that people are no longer using the trains or the subways. But there is very definitely a feeling all over Europe that this isn't just something that happens someplace else to somebody else. There is, I think, by now, a European public responding with a sort of collective response to events such as this.
But in Germany in particular?
Not in any different way than in other European countries. I mean, everybody all over Europe was standing still yesterday at noon for the commemorative 3 minutes. That was all over the continent. And there is, I think that there's both sympathy and awareness everywhere. And I think what Julian said about the sort of European state systems drawing together now and examining where they might have shortcomings in the organization of their police, their intelligence collection, and so on, have been accelerated considerably. There are shortcomings there. For example, in Germany, one of the problems that we have where we differ from other European countries is that, sort of like America, and of course based on the American example, we're a very federalized state. Our domestic security apparatus is federalized. In other words, it's state by state. And because of our very strict data collection laws, which are supposed to protect the citizen, it's difficult for those services to share information, and we're now thinking about changing that.
And you also have identity guards.
Unlike Americans, we've had identity cards for ever since I can remember, and no German has a problem with presenting those, even if he's pulled up in a traffic, for example, in a police routine traffic inspection. And those, in fact, played a significant role when Germany was combating its own domestic terrorism problem in the 70s and 80s.
We want to go back to our phone lines now to Cambridge, Massachusetts, and hear from Angel. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Well, it's actually Angel.
Thank you. I thought it might be.
You can call me Angel. That's fine. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'll try to be very brief. I just wanted to emphasize what some of your guests have been saying. I'm trying to explain to your listeners that this is not by any means an example of appeasement or an instance of rewarding terrorists for their actions. It's actually very much the opposite. It is an example of the people of Spain punishing a government for trying to deceive them and for trying to use terrorism for political advantage. And I think insofar as it was an example of that kind of behavior, it is not that defeat of democracy. It's actually a triumph of democracy, of making our governments accountable to us in an age in which many people believe that politicians can get away with anything they do, can lie to the people, can deceive, and just have no popular reaction. Mm-hmm. And I think that what is happening is good news. It is only on the basis of a very strong democracy that we can have any hope of defeating terrorism. And lastly, I would just ask your callers to, before accusing the people of Spain of getting cold feet or of sticking their head in the sand and so on, to remember that Spain is a country that has been fighting and suffering, but I said fighting firmly and courageously terrorism for 30 years. So maybe they should at least give them the benefit of the doubt.
Angel, we take your point, and thanks so much for the call. Constanza, what's your take on that?
Well, I agree with Angel. I think the Spanish have considerable experience with terrorism on their own, as they said. I think the problem, what makes it, I think it's difficult for the American public and the American media to follow just what is going on and has been changing in Europe since 9/11. I think there has been a complete change in attitudes. There has been a perception that we have threats to our external security as well that are, in fact, closer to us than America. The European Union has, in fact, written for itself a European security doctrine, which is a parallel document to the American national security doctrine, and it does provide for the use of force in the case of a terrorist threat or a proliferation threat. It just tries to balance that somewhat more than I think the American document does. We've tried to find a common position, and we're still on a common position, together with America, by the way, on Iran's very risky nuclear weapons program. We are preparing to take over the NATO operation in Bosnia. I think it's just absolutely wrong to say that the Europeans are practicing appeasement or sticking their head in the sand. A final word on Zapatero. My impression is that this man was in no way prepared to take over office. All the polls were saying that the conservative ruling party was going to do that, and I think Zapatero never thought that his promise to take back the troops was going to be called. And I think the fact that he's said that he will do this actually denotes, if anything, a lack of experience. No responsible public leader would withdraw a troop contingent of that size 3 months before with 3 months. It'll be very difficult for America and its allies to provide for replacement.
We'll have to leave it there for now. Constanza, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Listeners, what's your take on the way Europeans are responding to terrorism? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Gail Harris, and for Dick Gordon, this is The Connection from NPR. I'm Gail Harris, and for Dick Gordon, this is The Connection. This hour, we're talking about how Europeans are dealing with the terrorist attack in Spain and how their response to terrorism differs from ours. My guest is Julianne Smith from the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And Julianne, I want to pick up on a point we were talking about a little earlier in the program about how different countries are responding. For example, there's a heightened state of security now in France. They're at code red. And in the larger picture, you know, Europe has been trying to become more unified. There are now 10 more countries joining the European Union. And I'm wondering whether these new security concerns might make countries more sort of every country for itself. Is it even possible to have a more unified Europe and stronger and more defensible borders?
Well, the response inside Europe over the last couple of days has been pretty much across the board, again, tied to a heightened sense of alert and awareness. You can see that in a number of things. France is increasing the amount of chlorine in its water in the case that the water supply somehow would be targeted. It's closed all the private aviation clubs in the country. Greece has suddenly asked for assistance from NATO, actually, for the Olympics this summer. That's popped up as a concern. I mean, it's been a concern all along, but now with that added sense of alert. And Italy is thinking about its ties to the United States and how it's contributed to the efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan and how that might impact Italy as a potential target for al-Qaeda terrorists. Again, there's a lot of chatter, a lot of concern, a lot of meetings taking place, a sense of urgency and emergency inside Europe. But in terms of how all all of this may impact Europe's interests in forming some sort of common position and common national security policy or strategy. That has yet to be seen. I mean, we'll have to see how this plays out. There is tremendous disagreement inside Europe on kind of how Europe should take a role overall in the war on terrorism. As Constanza said, the EU recently came out with its own national security strategy meant to kind of match our own national security strategy. And that was quite striking. That was a really incredible initiative. It was a strategy that was written in about 7 weeks' time by Javier Solana in Brussels, and they deserve credit for moving forward and trying to address jointly these threats and these concerns. But there is very much a divide, and the debate is alive and well inside Europe, again, on whether or not you look at the root causes of terrorism. Should we be looking at questions of immigration, assimilation? Should we look at poverty reduction, our own individual policies towards the countries in the Middle East? Or should we use military force? And again, if you look at the UK, and you look at a country like France, you've got two very different perspectives on how to move forward. So there will be some fierce debates inside Europe in the coming months and the coming weeks on how to be a strong partner, how to address these threats, but also how to secure the safety of Europe's own citizens at home. And I think we'll see some very lively discussions in the coming weeks.
Well, let's get another perspective on the line from Providence, Rhode Island, where Rob is calling. Hello, Rob.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, my feeling really is that I think a lot of Europeans' concern is not that we want to appease and essentially back away from a fight. I think a lot of Europeans are concerned that we're fighting too many fights and that they're not the right fights. And if we go back to the beginning of all of this, 9/11, it seems, was a direct assault from al-Qaeda. And had nothing to do with Saddam Hussein or Iraq, despite despite what the Bush administration has tried to imply on a number of occasions. And I think that's the European concern, is that if we're going to win this battle, we need to know what fight we're trying to fight.
And do you think the Europeans will be able to keep that focus more acutely than you believe America has?
Well, I think at base they do seem to be. But, of course, everyone has to deal with America, and America is very powerful. And I think that on a world level, this is, in fact, making the focus fuzzier, less effective, and dangerous to everybody.
All right, Rob, appreciate the phone call. Julianne, what about that? Do you think the Europeans will be able to bring a different focus to bear here?
Well, I think he brought up just a tremendous, a very, very important point here. I mean, again, we talked about this earlier. Europe does separate the war on terrorism from the war in Iraq. They look at the purpose of the war in Iraq as addressing weapons of mass destruction, and the war on terrorism as fighting kind of these al-Qaeda terrorist cells and so forth. And so now that we're at the point 1 year out and we still have not found these weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, Europeans are kind of scratching their heads and asking that exact question. Is this the right fight? Was it right for us to go into Iraq looking for these weapons of mass destruction? We didn't find anything. They're second-guessing the whole mission and objective of the war in Iraq. And so I think they want to bring the focus back to terrorism, back to stamping out al-Qaeda terrorist cells and move away from what happened in Iraq. And that's why I think you're seeing this decision on the part of the Spanish government to withdraw its troops from Iraq. I mean, the election results really were tied to a number of things. We talked earlier with James about the fact that the whole frustration among the Spanish public with the cover-up. So that's kind of one of the main drivers, I think, in the election results, the utter frustration with this cover-up, trying to say that it was linked to ETA when it seems like the terrorist attacks are actually tied to al-Qaeda or some sort of Islamic group. And also, this question of no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, that also was a driver. And then there's just a faint tinge of anti-Americanism in this. The frustration with the United States and unilateralism, and the list is long. And so you saw this resistance to vote for a government that had closely aligned itself with the United States at a time when, frankly, there a lot of the folks in Europe are feeling somewhat frustrated with U.S. policy and the way that the United States has moved forward in the war on terrorism.
All right, we're going to Newton next to hear from Marilyn, Newton, Massachusetts. Hello, Marilyn.
Good morning. This is a very important discussion. I have two questions that sort of tie together and kind of tie in with everything you've been saying. I would like to, when I look at the invasion of Iraq and the consequences now, my question after what happened in Spain is, what did we actually accomplish, Spain, the United States, and other allies, in the war against terrorism by going into Iraq? Let us look at what's happening now in Iraq, what is happening in Europe, the fear that exists in the United States. Going into Iraq was supposed to make a huge impact on the problem of terrorism, and in fact, we're seeing more terrorism. And tied to that, in terms of the deployment of our United States treasure and power, what has concerned me now for a very, very long time is that this administration, I hear everywhere, is not putting enough money, in fact, is putting very little money into homeland security. There's a constant worry by all kinds of agencies, by mayors, by governors of states, that they just don't have the funds. And I think that that's critical, and I can't help but be envious when I hear that in Germany and France and the EU, the first thing they're doing is thinking of how they secure Europeans against further attacks.
All right, Marilyn, we hear you. Thank you so much for the call. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Julian, what about that?
Well, the war against terrorism has multiple levels to it. There is the fact that we have to improve first responders in the United States. We have to put more resources towards things like securing the general public against a terrorist attack, put more resources into the Department of Homeland Security. All those things are very important. And I think the Bush administration started out fairly strong on this. But now some could argue that it has received less attention in recent months than it really merits, and that the focus primarily has been on putting Iraq back together and focusing on the reconstruction efforts there. That seems to eclipse just about everything else. And again, Europeans are saying, look, we want to look at all of the levels of combating terrorism. We don't just want to focus on Iraq, partly because we do separate it out. And we feel like your efforts in Iraq, you, the United States, the Europeans are saying to themselves, have actually made us more insecure. It has threatened our own safety at home. And so we look at it, we the Europeans, as kind of cutting off Medusa's head and watching a bunch of them grow back. I mean, that sure, you have Al-Qaeda on the run. And by all accounts, it looks like we've eliminated, I don't know, from a third to two-thirds of the Al-Qaeda leadership. So some serious progress has been made. Again, most of that, though, through our efforts in Afghanistan and elsewhere, and less so in Iraq. And so, again, we have to be careful about how quickly we affiliate the efforts in Iraq with our determination to get rid of these Al-Qaeda terrorist cells.
And Julianne, I apologize for leaving out a vowel a moment ago. We have time for one more phone call. We want to go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and hear from Frank. Hello, Frank.
Hello. Good afternoon. Or good morning. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment, if I may, about the conversation at hand. You know, I feel that, you know, talking about the war on terrorism and separating it from Iraq, if you remember, President Bush, who I strongly support, stated that not only will we go after terrorist cells, but we'll go after any country that is harboring terrorism. And we've done that. You know, Iraq was harboring terrorists. They were allowing terrorists to come into their country, set up training camps, and train. They were supplying them with weapons.
So your point is this was the right fight?
I'm sorry?
Your point is this was the right fight?
that Europeans are looking
right
for?
Fight. And most definitely. And, you know, a couple of callers ago made a comment about Europeans are looking for the right fight. Well, you know, what is the right fight? This is not a traditional war where you have your enemy is right in front of you and he's going after strictly military targets. You know, these are guerrilla warriors who have no thought whatsoever to taking innocent civilian lives.
All and, right, Frank,
you know,
we take
if Europe
your point.
Scared, if Europe is scared because, you know, America's put them in a position where they're now more, you know, in more of a threat from these terrorisms, you know, they're buying into the whole terrorist mentality.
Okay, Frank, we got your point. Thank you so much. Julian, what about that? How do you define the right fight? And
well,
do you think Europe has it pretty much right?
I think Europe would agree with the United States that the right fight was Afghanistan. There's no question in anyone's mind. I mean, even France and Germany, who were strong opponents to the war in Iraq, they were tremendously supportive of our efforts in Afghanistan and helped in a number of ways and are now there on the ground. Germany, again, is playing a huge role in Afghanistan. I think there's very little disagreement on whether or not going after the Taliban in Afghanistan was the right thing to do. Very, very little disagreement. Again, you come back to Iraq, though, that's where you see the disagreement. The terrorist connections, frankly, I think are fairly loose, and I don't think President Bush would be prepared to stand up and say the number one reason we went to Iraq was to combat terrorism. It was to get rid of Saddam Hussein and find the weapons of mass destruction. We were concerned about the proliferation of WMD. What would happen if Saddam got a weapon of mass destruction in his hands? And we felt at that time that going after him and preventing that was the right thing to do. The terrorism link, I don't feel that's as strong. And so Europe can identify the right fight. I think Europe is with us in some of the efforts we're undertaking, Afghanistan, but in many areas.
Forgive me for jumping in. We just have a few seconds left, and I'm wondering if you see the end result as greater cooperation between Europe and the U.S. or more of a wedge?
I've got a yes and no. Greater cooperation between Europe and the United States on the things like law enforcement, intelligence, terrorist financing. Perhaps less cooperation on missions and wars like we just witnessed in Iraq.
All right. We'll have to leave it there for now. We thank you so much, Julianne Smith.
Thank you very much.
Special thanks to all my guests this hour, Julianne Smith from the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Earlier, we spoke with Constanze Stelzenmüller, who is International Security and Defense Editor of the German newspaper Die Zeit, and also with James Graff, Time Magazine Paris and Brussels Bureau Chief. You can continue the conversation at www.theconnection.org. Tara Murphy is our senior producer. I'm Gail Harris, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.